Okay, so we are Mussar Day for the first Perek of Parshas Vayakal, Perek Lamed Hey. Of course, today is the fifth day of September, first day of school, and the 14th day of Elul. Yeah, I was looking up, maybe we see there was a nice whole moon out last night. That was. It only goes down from here until we get to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so Vayakal Moshe is called that. So the pasuk tells us Moshe gathered everybody together, set them ilad v'mishri tivah Hashem lasso susam, and he continued on. It says shishas yamim tasem lacha, you'll do work for 6 days, and on the seventh day will be kodesh v'asher shon yelachem kolos haseb bo malacha yumas. If you do malacha on that day, you're going to die. Now malacha is an interesting term. What does malacha mean?
Work.
So there's another word that we use for work.
Avoda.
All right, what's the difference between avoda and malacha?
One's fun, one's not.
One's what?
One's fun.
One's fun and one's not. That's actually pretty good. That's pretty close. All right, avoda is a difficult, or not really difficult, that's not the best term either. Labor. Not necessarily.
No.
All right, malacha we usually translate as creative activities. Right, only malachos are prohibited on Shabbos. Avoda is not prohibited on Shabbos. In fact, the pasuk tells us, that's the other question the Rav here has. What does it say in Parshas Yisro? So sheishes yamim tavod v'asisa kol malachtecha. Never thought about this. We say this during Kiddush. 6 days you will work and you will do all your malacha. So the pasuk itself is using both terminology. Is it interchangeable? Nothing's ever interchangeable. But then it says, "V'yom hashvi'i Shabbos Hashem Elokecha, lo taseh kol malacha." Don't do any work. Again, it doesn't say anything about avoda. So what is the story with the avoda? So the one easy answer is, well, avoda is actually mutter. There's actually, at least d'oraisa, on a biblical level, there's nothing wrong with doing avoda on Shabbos. So what would qualify as avoda that would be permissible? So to sit and do weights. I want to lift something up and down many times. Or I want to go running. I want to work. Well, it depends what your work is.
I mean, some
labor would qualify as malacha.
Oh, okay.
Right, so I don't want to just say, well, work is okay. Things that don't qualify as malachos in theory are okay. So now how do we distinguish then between malacha and avoda? Why is one okay and why is one not okay? So remember last week we gave a shiur about the topic of malachas machsheves. What did malachas machsheves mean? Work of the brain, of the mind. So that is a term that we throughout there, but the way Rashi interpreted it, and Rav Asher Weiss in his piece that we learned, said that this is really the yisod, the principle of understanding the idea of malachas machsheves, qualified it as malachas umnus, the malacha of uman, the malacha of a, what's an uman? An uman is like a craftsman, the work of somebody that is doing skilled labor. And that then goes on and explains that Malachas Machsheves is a qualification for all of Hilchos Shabbos, for all Malachas Shabbos. It has to qualify as Malachas Machsheves, and it excludes many different things. So what do we mean that it excluded? So there are a lot of categories of things. So for instance, the idea of Shinoi. That's Shinoi might apply to other areas of Malacha as well. Or the idea of Malacha She'ina Tzricha L'gufa. The idea that the work, that the Malacha that you're doing, it has to be for the particular in the particular way that it was done in the Mishkan, or what we call misasik, what we call davar shein mischavin, what we call psikreisha delo nichalei. All of these are mitigating factors when it comes to the laws of Shabbos. What does one have to do in order for it to qualify as a malacha on Shabbos? It has to qualify as malachas machsheves. It has to be malachas umnus. What does it mean that it's a malachas umnus of a craftsman? It is productive work. It has to be productive work. Now, remember, that also explains the flip side. Most of the times you come across the Gemara, at least maybe all the times, except for one time that I know of, that a malachas machsheves is not a leniency in the laws of Shabbos, but rather it is a stringency. Normally, when you come across the term malachas machsheves, it's coming and answering a question. Why is such a thing on putter on Shabbos, in that it's only an Isser Durabanan, it's not an Isser Doraisa, or that it doesn't qualify for the death penalty, it doesn't qualify as a malacha d'oraisa? Well, because of malachas machsheves. That's the way it normally comes up. So malachas machsheves is usually a kula, qualifies as a leniency. There's one time that it qualifies as a stringency. maybe more than one, but one that I know of, and that is in Maseches Baba Kama, in the description of the prohibition, we did this last week, of the Malacha of, you remember? No? Well, that was something in the Rishonim. What? But explicitly in the Gemara was the Malacha of Zorah. What is Zorah? With a W? Winnowing. Right, winnowing. So what do we say is the interesting idea of Zorah? Zorah is done by throwing something in the air, and all of the not such good stuff gets blown away by the wind. So why? And if one does that, if you throw something up in the air and the wind blows stuff away, so you violate the Yisur D'Oraisa of Zorah. Why is that an interesting malacha? Why does it need to be an exception to the rule? First, what is interesting about that? That by throwing something in the air and the wind blowing it away, you violate an Isser D'Oraisa.
You're not doing it.
Right. The actual separation is not being done by you, it's being done by the wind, which under normal circumstances would qualify it as grumma. Right? The idea of grumma, that something else is actually causing what's going on. In fact, when it comes to the laws of Nezikin, that was the case. That was why the Gemara is in Maseches Baba Kama. That is considered a grumma when it comes to Nezikin, that the wind is blowing it, but when it comes to Shabbos, it's Yisur D'Oraisa. So why is it that in the area of Nezikin, in the area of damages, it's only rabbinic issue, or it doesn't qualify as a damaging thing, but in the laws of Shabbos, it qualifies as Yisur D'Oraisa? So the Gemara answers, Malechas Machsheves. So in that case, Malechas Machsheves is not a leniency, it's a stringency. Because there's a Malechas Machsheves aspect to Shabbos, something now has become an Yisur D'Oraisa. And that has become biblical that otherwise would have not been biblical. Right? So why does that make sense? Why does that work? Because that is the umnus, that is the work. Yes, it's true that a wind is helping you out, but that is considered productive labor. You throw something up in the air, now instead of having wheat and chaff, you only have the wheat, or grains and chaff, I'm not sure whatever it is. Whatever is blown away is blown away. Now you have what's left, so you've done a work. You're now closer to bread than you were before. So that is the qualification. That's what it means to be. That's what it means to be malacha. Malacha is by definition going to be considered positive, right? And that and avoda, by the way, is the opposite. Where is the classic time in history that Bnei Yisrael did avoda? That the Torah describes Bnei Yisrael as doing avoda.
That's true.
That's a good point. It is called the avoda of a Beis Hamikdash. However, I'm not sure the Torah ever calls it that. I don't know. That's a good point. Right? We'd have to work that out. Avodah Zarah is also. That's true. You got to think about the Avodah Zarah. That kind of goes against this topic. But when they did it was in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, the work that did Mitzrayim is known as Avodah Parach. All right, pain and difficult labor. So why is what was so painful? What was so difficult about it? So the Medrash tells us, we have heard this Medrash, that they built these cities on sand. So the cities all destroy themselves. And the work that was meant for adults was done by children, and work that was meant for children was done by adults. And nobody did that which they were fit in, which was appropriate for them. So nobody was able to feel fulfillment from it. So malacha is something that is productive, that you completed something and you can feel fulfilled by doing so. While avodah is something that just happens. Now, right? How does that fit in with avodah in the Beis Hamikdash? You got to find where that term originates from. I'm not sure. That's a good question. Got to work that out. So the Rav Salvechik in here, in the Rav speaks, gives a very interesting example of this. That he describes in Rabbi Rakefet. If you ever listen to Rabbi Rakefet's shirim online, he talks about this often. That when he was growing up, he was a young kid during the early 40s. He went to Salanter Academy, which later on became SAR in Riverdale. You may have heard of the school SAR. SAR stands for Salanter Akiva of Riverdale Academy. So I went to SAR for second to fifth grade. So that was one of the schools that that joined in Salanter Academy, school in the Bronx. So he describes that all of his rebbeim were all massive Tamidi Chachamim. They were big, big, big Tamidi Chachamim. How did you get these big, big, big Tamidi Chachamim to teach fourth grade? That because they were the, as he described, he calls them, the Shanghai crowd. They were the group from that were in the Mir Yeshiva that made their way to, across Russia to Japan to Shanghai, waited out the war in Shanghai, and then came to America. I guess it was the later 40s that he's describing. So they came here. What are they going to do? they don't know English, they don't know where, they were in yeshiva their whole life, and even you say, well, they could have gone out and learned to trade, the Holocaust that happened during that time. Wasn't really, so what could they do? So they were stuck teaching fifth graders. Now, there's nothing wrong with teaching fifth graders. There's nothing wrong with teaching third graders. I mean, it's pretty, you look at some of the rebbeim that my kids have, they are professional third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade teacher, rebbeim, and they do really an excellent job. But in order to do that, you have to kind of accept yourself as, this is my work. I'm a third grade rebbe, and I'm going to do the best I can with this, and that's my, right? But they never had that perspective. Their perspective is, I'm a massive Talmud Chacham. I know the entire Talmud Bavli backwards and forwards. I know Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam. And here I am teaching fourth graders. It doesn't fit me. It doesn't fit what my persona is. This was a common issue. Now, can you blame? I don't even want to blame them. That's just what they had to do, and it was very difficult to wrap their minds around. Around that this is their job, and that, you know, you hear stories of kids that grew up during that time, and the jokes that they played on their rebbeim and things like that, that's where it came from. It just was a mismatch. That was for them an avoda rather than a malacha. Generally, we try to, the truth is we refer to it as also as avoda sakodesh, but that's the thing, right? A malacha is something that is productive, and avoda is something that you just do, because one is forced into doing it. And that also underlies the idea of, that a person likes doing their own things more than others, as the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Metzia, Adam rotza b'kav shelo, mitisha kavim shel chaver. A person wants their own kav. A person wants their own measure rather than nine measures of somebody else. I, on Sunday, we had a problem that our toilet on the first floor was refilling, but it didn't stop refilling. The water kept coming in, and it wouldn't, even though it floated to the top, it didn't stop. So I went to, kept the door locked for about a month and a half, and it didn't stop. Went to Lowe's, actually got that thing, and I fixed the toilet by myself. And I am so proud of that toilet. Got in there, emptied the water, figured out how to connect the thing, and then there was a, the connection of the wall to the bottom of the toilet where the water goes in, so there's a small leak that was at the bottom of where that connection was. Like, great, now I gotta call, I fixed the toilet, now I gotta call a plumber for that. But then I got, it's hard once the wrench is too big to really get into that space. Whenever, when you come over to my house, I'll show you the toilet that we did. But I was able to do it, got that leak fixed, and
that's productive work.
That was a malacha. I'm proud of it, I'm excited about it. Yes, thank you very much. Okay, so that is a distinction between malacha and avoda, and that perhaps explains the beginning part of the parsha as well, right? Where we say sheish min tavod vasis kum lachdecha. So you'll work for six. This is in the Esther's Zedus. You work for 6 days, vasisa kum lachdecha, and you'll do malacha. And on Shabbos you'll stop the malacha. You won't do malacha. There might still be avoda. There might still be things you'll need to do, but the productive work is what is required to stop on Shabbos. Now, also notice there in the beginning of Vayakel, it says Sheshim Taseh Milacha. 6 days you'll do Milacha. What is not mentioned there? Avoda is not mentioned there. Why is Avoda not mentioned there? Because what are we describing? We're describing the making of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the epitome of Milacha rather than Avoda. That is something that is going to be productive. What makes it productive? So the Rav here has one other point, where he says that Shlomo HaMelech, when he writes Kohelet, so he talks about he says, I was never happy. So he describes the following pasuk, right? Kanisi, I purchased avadim ushvachos, uvenei vayis hayali gamakna vakar vetzon. I have servants and I have maidservants and I have all these flocks and sheep. Harbi hayali mikol shayu lefana b'yushalayim and yushalayim kanasi li gam, and I have been able to gather a lot of money. V'nius hasisi li sarv v'sarv sanugus b'ni adam sidu v'sidu. I've been able to gather all of these things. But yet he describes himself as not being satisfied. But yet I am not satisfied. Why is he not satisfied? So the Rav explains, Because he keeps saying, I have acquired these things for me. The Mishkan was a malacha on behalf of others. It's a malacha to build the Makom HaMikdash that was going to be used for everybody else as well. And that perhaps qualifies as a malacha rather than a avodah. Yes?
Are there 39 malachas identified in the Torah?
No. No, that was what we talked about last week, that the Gemara comments on this pasuk in Parshas Vayakel that the malachas of Shabbos are a mountain hanging by a hair. And there's a mountain of stuff in terms of the malacha. Actually, I think it was describing specifically malachas machshavas. That concept is a mountain hanging by a hair. Based on this pasuk in Vayakel, you get the entire mountain.
So, what's an example of avoda that you could do in Shabbos?
Well, on a level of Doraisa, you could do. Well, you can lift weights on Shabbat, right? You can.
But to prevent it,
destroying a house technically would is not. I mean, there's a malacha called Soser, but that's only if you plan on rebuilding. If you just destroy a house, we call that avoda, but it's what we call mekalkel. Mekalkel is destructive act. Well. Many of these things fall under rabbinic prohibitions, and it's not a Shabbos stick, but on a Torah level, it would be permissible. Yeah. Okay, so the other.
Rabbinic prohibitions prohibit avoda also, by and large?
So rabbinic prohibitions prohibit prohibit a lot of avoda. Yeah.
Okay.
They prohibit a lot of non malachas machshavas activities. I mean, it's also an avoda to walk to the shul. It's also an avoda to cut the meat. Okay. So the other thing that we come across is the cross section of the Mishkan and Shabbos. The Mishkan and Shabbos, right? The malachos are learned out from one another. That's found in this part, Shabbat, which says, but yet a couple of psukim later, it then. It says Eila Hadvarim. These are the things. Shishas Yamim, and you're going to do the Malacha on Shabbos. You're going to do Malacha for 6 weeks, and you're not going to do it on Shabbos. And then in Pasuk Dalet, it says Ve'er Moshel Kodas Yisrael Leimor Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem Leimor. So these are the things. One thing being Shabbos, and this is the other thing. The other thing is the Mishkan. So you have this connection between Mishkan and Shabbos.
Where is that?
Pasuk Dalet. Okay, the other when we had that last week, not last week's parsha, but in the Parsha's Kitisa, which is the previous week's parsha, as well. In that description of Shabbos that you have over there, you have the mitzvah described of building the Mishkan that is commanded. Where is that? That is. Right in pasuk Yud Perek Lamed Aleph pasuk Yud Aleph, it says you're going to make the Mishkan. It's like Torah, the Kodesh Kachash Tzivicha Yasu. Everything that I command you with the Mishkan, you're going to do. The very next pasuk Vayomer Hashem Loshel Emor, and the pasuk right after that is Viatad Debel Bnei Yisrael Emor Achas Shabbos Sayat Tishmor, and also you're going to keep Shabbos. So that is connection number two. And then there's two other times over the course of Vayikra where the pasuk is given as Shabbos that's actually mentioned twice, one in the beginning of Parshas Bahar and one of them is in Parshas Kedoshim. Right, so both and both those times as well, they're put together in the same pasuk. You're going to keep my Shabbos and you're going to be in awe of the Beis HaMikdash. You're going to put the two of those together. So what is this cross-section of Shabbos and Mishkan? And the Rav describes that they're just that they're bringing the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. One of them is talking about space, and one of them is talking about time, right? That Beis HaMikdash is a space for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Shabbos is the time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's part of what especially Friday night, that's part of what we do over the course of Friday night, where we go lechadodi, we go out in order to greet the Shabbos Malka. He has a whole piece here where he had a machlokas with Rav Moshe. Doesn't really decide it. If you have a shul, right, what do we do in Bowie Kal at the last section of lechadodi? So you turn around and face the
entrance, your door,
and. In the back. There you go. Right? So you say you face the door, you say you face the back. So what happened? So generally speaking, often, especially in shuls 100, 200 years ago, where was the door? It was in the back. However, in many shuls today, that's not necessarily the case, whether you face the door or whether you face the back. So the Rav held that you should face the door. It only makes sense, was the Shekhinah coming in. And Rav Moshe said you should face the back. Why in the world would you face the back? Because that's where generally the shul is facing east, and the Shekhinah, the Gemara says, is found in the west. So in order to greet the Shekhinah, you go to the west. I mean, when the Gemara says that people would go out in order to greet the Shabbos, in which direction would they go? Where would they go to greet the Shabbos? Right? There's no door, so they would go west. They would go towards the sun. Right. So I wanted to look up the Gemara. The Gemara said, because the Shekhinah was in the west. Why was the Shekhinah in the west? Is it because they were in Bavel, and the Shekhinah was in the west? Or is it a general thing that the Shekhinah is considered in the west? I'm not sure. But either way, that's the source of the...
The setting is the
answer.
What?
Shabbos starts the sun setting in the west.
Correct. Is that where we say the Shekhinah is, though?
I thought that was... When the Mikdash was destroyed, right, did the Shekhinah...
I'm not sure. It says Shekhinah was in Galus, but I'm not sure. We have a specific direction where the Shekhinah went. I'm not sure. But it's really talking about the same thing. Going out in order to greet the Shabbos, to recognize that there is a Shekhinah that is coming to join us. Even adds in the following thing. How many dimensions are included in space? Three, right? Space is generally three directions. Height, width, length, width, and depth. Right? And then you have time is considered the fourth dimension.
Yeah.
We pointed before, how many times do we have the intersection of Shabbos and the basin and the Mishkan? Four times. Ooh. I'm surprised to see that in the writings of the Rav. Yet that's what Rav Soloveitchik says. Okay, one other point to make. Bruce would like that. But, you know. One other thing that we pointed out over the course of this parak was the issue with the threading of the hair off of the back of the goats. Do I need to tell the joke again? Or? Okay. So what was the reason for that? So why did they do that? So remember, we read the Sforno on Rishonim Day. We read the Sforno. Sforno said, because everybody knows that things are better when they come right from the source. So therefore, if you separate the threads off of the back of the goats, it's not going to be as lush, it's not going to be as colorful, it's not going to be as vibrant as it would be if you would just take it right off the back of the sheep. Okay, so that's what they did. And that was considered an extra hiddur when it came to these things. That's what the Sforno says. So, but is there perhaps... maybe there's some other reasons for that as well. So, and there's a problem with that too, you say? What's the problem?
Because it's filthy on an animal. Normally, if you
clean it first, right? That's a sar balakai.
Maybe they did clean it first.
We give a shampoo?
Yeah.
Maybe, but that wasn't...
Give a lakai.
Well, it goes without saying. Especially when you consider who are the ones that were doing this. Who are the ones that did this work? No, Vital didn't do it. Who are the ones who did the who did this work? No. What? The
weavers.
Oh, the weavers. Okay, who are the weavers? For this particular job. Pasuk says, "Vayevoh hanashim al hanashim." The men came to the woman. They brought all their stuff. Vachol ish shenimsa yisotachelz paragaman. They would bring their stuff. Kol meirim. Where is vachol shenimsa? Kol isha chachma slave biyada tavu. Any woman who was wise enough was able to weave the matven tachelz paragaman tlashin viyaseshim. Vachol hanashim asher nasali banesned bechachma tavu esayizim. So the women who were knowledgeable wove the tachelz, and all the women that could, that had it in their hearts, would weave off of the back of the goats. So the women did it. So that answers Sam's question. Why didn't they clean the goat first? Goes without saying. Not only it's the women who are in charge. How could they not have cleaned it? Fine. So that's idea number one. The Sforno, what?
They always stop when they did. Or something. They spun it first and they got the thread. Then they
Translated spinning.
How they just go away from...
They translated spinning.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Spinning, then
they spun the thread. Yes.
Then spin the first thing.
Yes. They span it off of the back of the goat.
That
yes.
would make sense.
Yes. So thank you. Okay, so that's number one. So one idea is just to make it more beautiful. Second idea is from the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma points out, this is like such a Meshech Chachma thing. What did the previous Pasuk say? Right, you got it? Pasuk Lamed Hei, Pasuk Chaf Hei. Right, Pasuk Hei is Chol HaIsha, Chachma Slevi Adet Havu. Right, all of any woman or any single woman who had it in her heart would come and she would weave the Tcheles and the Argamon. Right, that's pasuk number one.
So that was after they spun it,
would spin it. Every woman span the turquoise and the purple. Right, that's number one. What's the next pasuk? V'chol hanashim asher nasali ban. All of the women would spin off of the back of the goats for this other stuff. Tavu asayizim. Right, which is not the Chesed Argamon. What's the difference? Why does the first pasuk say any woman, and the second pasuk is the woman? Like the multiple women. So the Meshech Chachma says, why did they do this going off the back of the goats? He says, because there's an issue that a woman is going ahead and doing all these things. There is a chance that she is Tamei. Right? The chance that she's Tamei. Perhaps she is a Nida. So in the first Pasuk, when it describes them doing a single woman doing the Tchilas Argamon, what if she was Tamei? What if she was a Nida at that time? She just wouldn't do it. Right? She wouldn't do that job. Right, but all of the women were involved with spinning off of the back of the goats. So why did they spin directly off the back of the goats? Says the Meshech Chachma, because so long as the hair was still connected to the goat, it's not the Kaval Tuma. Got it.
Of course.
Sam was thinking that.
That's all around him.
Okay, one more. One more approach here is that Rabbi Simon here quotes from the Aruga Sabosim. The Aruga Sabosim was Moshe Greenwald. Moshe Greenwald was the Rav in the town of, I think we might have mentioned before, I'm not sure, Chust. He's the Rav in the town of Chust. His grandson was Rav Yeshua Greenwald, who. He was the very early, I think he passed away in 1910 or so. His grandson was Rav Yeshua Greenwald. Rav Yeshua Greenwald actually survived the war. Was in camp.
I don't know, that was like Austria-Hungary.
Chust was Hungary. Yeah. I know. This is meaningful to me. My grandfather was in Chust.
That was the best place.
My grandfather grew up in some shtetl. I forget the name. But then, in order for him to go to yeshiva, his parents moved to the town of Chust, which was the Greenwald's town. Rav Yeshua Greenwald was the Rav of the town. Rav Yeshua Greenwald has a lot of tshuvos about stuff during the Holocaust. Generally, that's Ravoshri, we know. Often are the Shalosh Tshuvos Mima Makim. He has many tshuvos of things that are asked during the Holocaust, but Ravoshri Greenwald has, or Yeshua Greenwald has a few as well. What?
My family suffered so much with the Tsar and the Cossacks. That part was relatively safe.
In Hungary.
Until
the Holocaust started.
Well, even then they were the last ones to go.
They were the last ones, right. And a lot of survivors from camp, the majority come from Hungary, right, because they were in the camp, came into the camps the latest. So anyways, he points out that there's a Gemara Maseches Beitzah that talk about three things that are considered strong, so to speak. The Yisrael amongst the Umos is considered strong, a Kalev amongst the Chayos, a dog amongst other types of beasts is considered Chay, especially if your name is Fezik, and a Tarnagol amongst the Ophos, and a chicken amongst the birds. Those are three things that are considered strong. And then the Gemara says, V'yishom af oz b'behema daka, the goat amongst the other small animals. The goat is considered the strongest of the of those animals. So he says that after Bnei Yisrael sinned, by the way, there's a little bit of a feature here that he points out, and that is the Gemara in Shabbos says that if you spin off the back of the goats, you're not chayav a malacha on Shabbos. Right, why not? Well, it's not the normal way of spinning. Right, but that was the way it was done in the Beis Hamikdash. That kind of added to the question a little bit. They did it in a way that wasn't a malacha. The Gemara says, well, if you did it knowing what you're doing, because then it is considered a malacha. But okay, anyway, so he says, so after Bnei Yisrael sinned, and they broke themselves down. They were concerned that maybe they didn't have gevura anymore. They didn't have strength. So their response was to work with these goats, to so to speak, spin directly off the goats to demonstrate that they still had gevura. Just as the goat maintained its gevura, so to Bnei Israel had its gevura. And as the Mishkan was to some extent, a response to the Chet HaEgel. This is their opportunity to build themselves up and to strengthen themselves and recognize that we're still, we still have Furu, we still have a connection, and we're still going to be able to, the Yama Neftar. Yes. What? The woman worried about the Chet HaEgel. That's a good point.
It's like the.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So you can take the other answer.
No, I don't.
All right, have a good day.